Hey everybody, welcome to Teenagers with Attitude, the show where a bunch of grown adults sit around and talk about teenagers in tightly colored clothing fighting monsters. We've escaped the Lost Galaxy, hooray!
Again.
I'm Zach. Hold on, I need to say my name first. I'm Zach. Yes, we've escaped it for the second time. And joining me, we've got Emily.
Hey.
We've got Morgan.
Were we ever in the Lost Galaxy?
Yeah, there's that one
briefly,
arc.
But then,
it wasn't a good arc, though.
Well, okay.
You were there,
I didn't mean
though.
To.
Technically,
hold
you're
up,
in
hold,
the...
Keep going.
Okay, and then we've got Aris.
Hi. You can now resume your regularly scheduled arguing about what was the Lost Galaxy.
Okay.
Well, there was an arc where we were in the Lost Galaxy, but that's also what the show is called. So
yeah,
I was referring to escaping the show.
I get it.
Which a friend of the show, Ava, I was playing Helldivers with her last night, and she was like, I didn't realize the Lost Galaxy was like really long. And I was like, no, it's not longer than the other seasons. It just feels like we've been doing this season forever, because we, you know, there was a
writer's strike, and also the schedule changed,
and we changed the schedule, so it feels like we've been doing it forever. But this is the last one. We're free.
Ooh.
You know, we'll talk about it. This is fine. This episode's okay. But before we talk about it, I'm gonna go around real quick and see what everybody's been up to. So, Emily, what you been up to? Anything cool since last time we recorded?
Well, I got kind of hyper-fixated on the Phantasy Star franchise and started playing Phantasy Star Online.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I started playing Phantasy Star Online with Cassie, like on a private server. That's been fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I started playing New Genesis, which is like the current Phantasy Star Online game. And that's okay. It's all right. It's fine. It's not like amazing. If Phantasy Star Online 1 is still the best Phantasy Star Online game. And
that's too
but
bad.
I also have ADHD, so I switched a bunch of shit. So I downloaded more games on my PlayStation 5 off of the PlayStation Premium thing, Plus Premium. And I one of the games I downloaded was, I had to look this up because I don't remember its name, Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a...
I saw Cassie talking about this today.
Yeah, she was tweeting about it. So, like, I like was never going to ever play this game because I was like, I'm not going to buy a rhythm game for Kingdom Hearts because I'm not even that into rhythm games. But it was like, I could download it for free, so sure. And I've had a lot of fun with it, to be honest. It's actually pretty fun. But there's like, it's really weird in a lot of ways. Like, Kairi's on the cover. And I remember like it being like, oh, it's a story about Kairi.
No.
It's not
really
at all. It's like, the only time you hear from Kairi for most of the game is it kind of like summarizes the series. So you go through like all the different Kingdom Hearts 1 levels, their songs, and then you do 2, and then, you know, BBS and Dream Drop Distance and 3. Mm-hmm. And she like narrates the cinematics that like explain what the plot was. So like that's kind of her whole thing. And then at the very end of the game, you finally get the new story that's in this game. And like you play as her for like 2 levels. You never play as her in any other in the rest of the game at all. Even though there's like several teams you can play as. Like, you can play as Team Sora, which is like Sora, Donald, and Goofy. You can play as like Team Days, which is like Roxas, Xion, Axel. Then there's Team Dream, which is like Dream Drop Distance characters, which is this Riku from that game, and 2 of the Dreamweaver people you can have in your party. And then the last team is BBS with Aqua, Ventus, and Terra. And none of us have Kairi, you might have noticed.
Yeah.
So you only play as Kairi for like 2 levels, and then it gets into like one of the boss fights, but Kairi doesn't do it. Sora replaces her. And you play as Sora.
That's incredible.
Because the whole gimmick, because I bought this game because I'm a sucker back when it came out. Yeah. But yeah, because the gimmick is, the whole gimmick of the game is like you're going through Kyrie's memory to try and find a way to bring back Sora, but you, but the game from existence.
The game doesn't start with you leading into that, though. It's not like, it just, you just start playing levels and it doesn't give you this like framing until the very end of the game. And like, and it's so dumb because like it shows a cinematic of like Kyrie fighting the last boss, and then like she brings out Sora's kingdom key. And I'm like, okay, that's cool, that's fine. But then she gets replaced entirely with Sora, and it's like he's saving her, and it's like, you didn't have to do that. Like you could have had her pull out the kingdom key, overlay Sora over her once to make it clear that he's helping her, and then play as Kyrie. I don't understand why they made you play as Sora. Like, it's so shitty. And
because Nomura fucking hates Kyrie so much,
I guess. But he also loves her because he like bases her like design off of like Hikaru Utada like every game. So he must think like some like fondness for her. Like, I don't. And like, so what were you gonna say, Zach?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you say your thing first, because I want to talk about the gameplay.
I was just saying
now.
So I have only played like Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, but I do know that like I have heard, not just in this game, but that Kyrie is like basically given the shaft like constantly.
Yeah,
is that it's not just this that always happens. It's just that this is extra bad because she's literally on the cover.
Yeah,
is that,
exactly. Uh-huh. Like, she's on the cover, and the story is about going through her memories, and then she isn't. And then they could have put like you're going through her memories as like a framing throughout the whole game. And at least you would have like seen her in cinematics or something, but no, it's just at the very end you find out what the whole game is, which you already kind of know because like in the promotional material it told you that, which is why I was weirded out. Why I was like, oh, surely after the first world, like the first game is going to have like the framing device. No, it doesn't. But yeah. And then the gameplay is really weird because like, so there's three different modes of gameplay. There's, the main one you do, which is called like field battle. And that's like, you probably, you've seen it. Like it's like the three characters are running on a music track and you have to like do attacks that match with the rhythm. And it's really fucking fun. And I love it. And then they have the boss battle, which I don't like as much, where it's like, I guess, cause you're fighting one guy. It just shows like you fighting the guy in the background while like music notes come by, more like more similar to like the singing in Rock Band, if that makes any sense, like the direction. But then you just have to like, sure. I mean, you have to match up the notes with like this line on this music thing. So it's like a completely different kind of game, and it's not as good. Like, it's not as fun to do.
Yeah,
that's a bummer.
And
the boss one's not as good.
Yeah, and then in the third game, they kind of introduce it at the very beginning of the game, because the game starts off with you doing a music level, that's like this, which is called like a memory dive, and it doesn't tell you how to play the game though. It just throws you in on the opening song with like, here, play. So that was confusing. But then you start doing it in three, because then like the rest of the levels are all done with like Kingdom Hearts, like PS2 era graphics, like the rest of the game. But the Kingdom Hearts 3 levels, they would have either had to like make you use Kingdom Hearts 3 engine, or they would have had to like try to remake all the worlds with the PS2 graphics. So instead you just fly like towards the screen with your character with like game footage in the background. And then like you have,
that's pretty wild. You hit
similar music markers to like the boss battle ones. Cause like, yeah, it's got, and like, it's just not as fun as like the main game. And it's just like, I don't know, like why even have these songs in then if you're not going to like the almost like 90% of the game is one way and like 10% is different. And it's not as fun to play, and it's weird. Like, I don't know how you felt about it, Iris, if you feel the same way, where the boss battles and the memory dives weren't as good as like the main levels.
Yeah, I recall thinking like, oh, okay, this is sort of like what they do with Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm, but worse.
Yeah.
Because Theater Rhythm also has the like the three different styles. where there's like
I've never played Theatre of Them.
So. Yeah, where like you've got there's one set of gameplay for where your characters are moving through a like an environment they call I think like the field field music. Then there's where you are battling through waves of enemies. And then there's one where you are shown a cutscene from a game and the sort of symbols are appearing all over the screen, sort of like a Owen Don style.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it works better for that, but I don't think it works very well for this game. And it makes the game look like the levels that are like the memory dives look cheaper because they're not designing these like levels where you're fighting these enemies. Right. It's just like a character going on a straight line while there's footage behind them. It just looks cheaper. Like when you do the Let It Go level, which I love that they put that song in there, it just feels like I'm playing some like Disney mobile rhythm game, not like
the other
parts of the game. Like
it sounds like when Disney used to put out like those VHSs that were just songs from like various movies. That's weird.
But like, like the main game's really fun and I was really enjoying it and I've almost beaten it. I need to unlock this like extra area, but you need like, so each level has like three missions that are optional, but like they aren't really optional because you need a certain amount of stars to like, which you get from completing missions to get further in the game. And there's like a side area with side content that needs like 280 stars to get through. So I'm just trying to like go back to old levels, get the stars. I can do all of them. I'm not going to try to like 100% the game or anything because, oh my God, proud mode is ridiculous. But yeah. Like, I want to play every level, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool that you're having fun with the game.
A lot of caveats.
This conversation.
It's mostly fun. And it's, you know, for getting it off a subscription service, I don't feel cheated, you know? I don't know if Iris did when she got it.
I regret it a little.
I have not played Kingdom Hearts 2 since it came out, but this conversation has dredged up the deep buried memory of that Little Mermaid level.
Oh, it's better than that. It's way better than that.
It'd have to be because I remember being like, I kind of can't believe this like made it into the printed game. If you never played it, it's like an original song
do a rhythm game over it, and it's a bad rhythm game, and they're bad songs.
I recall literally like. It sounding like people were singing off key.
Yeah.
That it was like that.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
But it's been a while.
I don't know if it's off key, but it has like really weird rhythm, the songs, like, where they don't really sound like songs. They sound like nonsense. And yeah, like, I guess one other thing I want to say is that I really like Kingdom Hearts music. So that's really adding to my enjoyment. Like, Yoko Shimomura, who did the music, is amazing. And it's like been really fun just listening to all those tunes while playing the game.
Have you played Theatre of Them?
I have not. Oh, yeah. And there's one more thing I wanted to complain about in the game. Sorry. But, like, the calibration was off.
Oh.
Right? But there's no, there's no calibration mode. You can, like, set it minus or plus. But there's no, like, I remember Rock Band, it had, like, a thing where it's, like, hit the fret when you think it's going to do it. And then it calibrates it to your TV. This one doesn't. You kind of just have to do trial and error to figure out what it is, and I think I've got it right. Yeah. It feels good most of the time, so yeah.
It could. Have you checked the lag settings on your TV?
No.
Okay, because that's also a possibility.
Because I don't know. Yeah, I'm not very good with TV stuff, but
most TVs newer
ones. The game has a calibration setting. It is calibration options. It just doesn't let you go into a mode to figure out what they are.
Fair.
Gotcha. Most newer TVs, if they have a game mode, that's the mode.
This is quite older. This TV is 720p.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then yeah, maybe not. But some of those older ones had a game mode too. So I don't know. Maybe worth checking. Well, cool. Morgan, what you been up to? Anything cool since last time we recorded?
More Scribble Hub. I have gone through the entire oeuvre of a author called Zoe Storm, which are just a bunch of cute little trans narratives, which is funny because a bunch of them are interlinking where just about every trans woman in the U.S. goes to some college in New York, which I thought was a weird fact, but kind of funny.
That's good. I like when like fic lit authors are like, also I've got my own, you know, Stephen King interconnected universe thing.
Did get grumpy at it because I thought there was going to be like a Butch T for T trans woman story, and it turned out it was T for T, but one of the characters was a guy, which was fine. But then there was no like Butch ending, and I was promised things by the beginning of that story that I feel like the end of that story did not pan out to.
Bait and
I still
switch.
Enjoyed it, but I'm still grumpy.
Gotcha. Yeah, we actually did a like discussion bonus podcast about Zoe Storm's To Own the Libs story
I enjoyed
like
that one.
Eidolon that one's playtest
good.
Bonus podcast.
Oh, I'm sure Fabby was leading that one.
Yes, she was.
She fucking loves
that
story.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's for sure
Fabby has talked to me about Zoe Storm on multiple occasions.
That is the best Zoe Storm story. However, a bunch of the characters that show up in there are from the one that I was just grumbling about how I wanted Butch Lesbian.
I see.
But the story is still fine. It's still worth reading. All of this stuff is freely available on Scribble Hub if you want to go read it.
check it out if that sounds fun. And then,
I played a sort of little horror adventure game called Little Goody Two Shoes.
I saw that.
Yeah, it is sort of a isometric like adventure game. Starring it's basically set in sort of like a kind of rustic fairy tale setting.
She looks like anime Little Red Riding Hood.
The main character Elise essentially looks like anime Little Red Riding Hood. And you know, she grew up, she was taken
in
by.
I am a fan of that aesthetic.
Yeah, it's really
Toho.
Great. It's sort of like an 80s shoujo style. And like she, you know, an old lady like found her in the woods, you know, just abandoned in a fairy circle, took her as her own and raised her. And then the story begins, you know, after the grandmother has passed away, and Elise, is just like dirt poor. You know, just doing odd jobs around town, and she's frustrated that no one seems to appreciate her, and she's like stuck living in a dilapidated cabin in the middle of the woods with like hardly any money to speak of, and she just wants to, you know, have riches and servants and to be in a castle, and she gets wrapped up in some extremely creepy witch shit, with supernatural things starting to occur in the woods and in town. And each night, at midnight, her consciousness gets dragged into a sort of like surreal nightmare realm, where various like, supernatural creatures, she has to like navigate through sort of surreal landscapes populated by supernatural creatures that can hurt her. And the whole thing, without giving too much away, she eventually decides to like, you know, she finds a early on, she finds a mysterious girl who just shows up at her house one day, like trying to take shelter in a shed nearby. And Elise decides to take her in, is feeling feeling sorry for her. And she tells Elise, like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, there's, you know, there's, you've been chosen for, like, a ritual to, like, provide sacrifices to him. And in exchange, capitalized. And in exchange, he'll give you, like, whatever you most desire. And she assures her, oh yeah, no, it's fine. Like, you know, it sounds creepy, but, like, you know, you can, like, you can give him locks of hair, things like that. It's nothing bad. And so she decides, like, well, I want to get out of this town and I want money. So fuck it. I'll give it a shot. So you're basically collecting sacrifices throughout the game while attempting to divert suspicion away from you. Because also you have to interact with the villagers each day, and if you behave weirdly, they might suspect that you are a witch and will burn you at the stake.
Damn.
I'm looking at the trailer for this on Steam, and first of all, I think
Little Goody Two Shoes.
It's got, like, a pixel art style, but it's really cool. Nice looking. And it looks...
I was just going to ask, there's a second dateable girl as well, right?
Yeah, there are three, actually.
Oh, okay.
So there's the witch that you meet. There's, like, well, she's not... I don't know. I didn't do her route. She might not actually be a witch. She might just be a weird girl. But yeah, the girl at the start who shows up and tells you about the ritual, you can date her. There's also, like, a childhood friend character, because of course there is.
Oh, it looks really cute. I went for the nun.
Leb Kukin.
Nice. Very that, good.
She was great. I liked her a lot.
Nuns are good.
Yeah, nuns are good is the thing.
I can't fault you there.
But I like that, like, it looks like the daytime stuff basically looks like Harvest Moon. I know it's not, but, like, that's what the aesthetic is, kind of. And then the nighttime stuff looks like...
Yeah, really
fucked up. Not, like, gory or anything, but just, like...
It looks really cute. I like how this game looks.
And the dating scenes are pretty fun as well. Like, I just posted a screenshot of one of them where that you can have with the nun, where Elise just, like, they're hanging out in the church and sitting on a pew, and Elise rests her head on the nun's lap and just says, this is what I came here for. it's pretty good. My only complaint is that some of the nighttime segments can get a little frustrating, both just because of, like, the enemies and, but primarily because, like, in a couple places, one area primarily, like, what you're supposed to do is kind of opaque. There was one particular section where I was stuck on it for, like, a good half hour, and I had to, like, look up a long play to figure out, like, what thing I was missing.
I was just going to say that actually goes into kind of what I was going to talk about. I played another game that is also, I don't think, is super big in terms of, like, that not that many people have played it. And boy, I miss GameFAQs.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because now if you get stuck in a game that's not super popular, you have to fucking find a 15 hour YouTube video and find in it the spot that you need.
Yeah.
It sucks.
But still, like, that's really my only major complaint with it, is, like, some of the, like, puzzles in the nighttime sequence are kind of hard to figure out and just seem needlessly obtuse.
Yeah. I want to play this now.
Other than that, had a really good time with it.
There's a free demo also.
I'm planning on going back to it eventually to do the other two routes. Which will go a lot easier now that I, like, know how all the systems work. But yeah, I had a great time with it, and it only took me, like, 10 and a half hours to get through my first playthrough. And that was, like, with the time I spent, like, getting the other endings I was able to get with the route I chose. Cause there's like 10 different endings you can get. I did like, I think, four of them. Yeah.
It's cool. I will also say this is actually published by Square Enix, which is interesting. But the developer has one other game called Pocket Mirror, which is also a horror adventure dating pixel graphic game. So apparently they have a thing that they like to do. And hey, that's cool. I don't know of that many other people doing it.
I'm on the Steam page for the game right now, and it's like, you know how Steam has that, like, is this game relevant to you? And it's similar to games you've played. It has the games it's similar to, according to Steam, is Undertale. Okay, sure.
I guess I can see that.
And the other one is Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
What?
I guess the protagonist is the only I can think of that's similar.
I guess.
So I don't have that many games on Steam, and if you don't, it really stretches to find stuff. It's like, I don't know. I'm just guessing. Well, cool. That sounds
neat. I originally found it because I follow – I don't really follow a lot of Steam curators. I only have like two, I think. And one of them is a Steam curator called Hella Yuri.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Incredible.
And what they primarily is just like tag various games and recommend them and let you know like what type of content there is. Like, is it, you know, a sort of chaste friendship or relationship? Is it like an actual romance option? You know, is it explicit? That sort of thing.
That's cool. That's neat, because it's not always clear.
I have actually found that curator to be very useful for me. So
nice. I this is something I have complained slightly about before, and I want to be careful because headcanons are awesome. I love when people headcanon stuff. Sometimes if you listen to the internet and haven't seen the piece of media. Yeah. And then you go in, it's like, I thought the whole internet said these two characters were gay. And it's like, no,
they're not. Well, it's why I can never play Baldur's Gate. Baldur's Gate 3, I have only seen fan art of that game. I understand that it is not about three lesbians dating each other.
God,
and
I wish
so
it was.
Therefore, I'm just not going to play it.
That's fair.
Well, that game is... All the characters in that game are player sexual, which is its own conversation. Yeah. But yes, those characters don't actually date each other.
Yeah, I went into that game expecting I was going to be able to like do a polycule of my character Shadowheart and Karlach, and you definitely cannot do that.
Yeah. Some of the characters are open to like poly stuff, but like I think you can date Shadowheart and like. Fucking, what's the druid guy's name? Halston. You can date those two.
Yeah, but you cannot date two of the origin characters at the same time.
No.
No, none of the major characters.
Sucks.
Yeah. It's silly. Cool. Well, neat. This seems pretty neat. I'm going to have to check that out. And then mine is I also played a game on Steam, kind of an indie game.
Sorry, I was just
going
to say real quick, when it comes to like, you guys talking about like, stuff being like advertised to you as being really gay and then like watching something. For me, it was like, okay, like, yes, Velma and Hot Dog Water are gay, but there's like barely any of that story in the show. And I watched it being like, I can't wait to see these two gay girls. And then there's barely anything.
I think it's one of those things because that's from Mystery Inc.
And like,
Inc.,
you could totally read them as gay. That's like totally real. It's just there's very little content of that. Like very little.
I think it's because that game was or that show was from like 2010, and I feel like that was still pretty like kind of wild for a Scooby-Doo show to even do that at all. But I agree. Now I feel like that they've had Velma be gay and like
I think it's only been like an animated movie.
I think it's just the one thing, but
so that's cool. But yeah, I get that frustration for sure. So I played this game called Mini Shoot Adventures. I'm double checking because there's something weird about the title. Yes. So if you're on Steam, for some reason, it's mini shoot and then an apostrophe as though it was going to be possessive, but there's no S, and then adventures. I don't know why. It's made by two people who I don't think English is their first language, so that might be part of it. And I also might be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure. But it is a top-down, like, Link to the Past, Zelda-ish, like, way you navigate through the world. But you are playing as a ship from, like, a bullet hell. So instead of controlling a little guy, you control a ship, and instead of getting a new sword, you get extra bullets and bombs and stuff like that.
Looks right up my alley.
It's so fucking good. I have been trying to get people to play it because it rules, and it also has, because I have a couple friends who really struggle with these kinds of games,
or like
with bullet hells. Yeah, and I will say that if you go on Steam, the trailer for it, I think, really mostly shows you a lot of later stuff, and that's cool because it shows you like what you'll eventually ramp up to. But I think one of the things it's really good at is letting you get used to it it's like 12-ish hours, I think, something around that. It's not super long, but you'll get, you know, better at it if those types of games. Basically, I'm just saying it's not like you start the game and the whole screen is filled with bullets. It takes a while to get there.
It's fine. I play total games. I'll
and
be
it gives
okay.
you
yeah.
Right. And it gives you there's a couple different difficulties, and it gives you a lot of tools to deal with that stuff. But it also the Zelda / Metroid-y part of it, I really appreciate, because it's not it really does remind me of like the first and second, well, not second, I guess, not Zelda 2 or Link. Zelda 2?
Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link.
Zelda 2, not that one. Zelda 2, Adventure of Link is the side-scroller.
Yeah, so Zelda, Legend of Zelda, and Link to the Past, in that, like, you have a map, and it'll, like, show you a symbol, like, this is the area you need to go to for the next dungeon, and that's it. It doesn't tell you anything else. So, like, it you will not get like insanely lost, but it is not holding your hand to the degree that a lot of the later Zeldas do, which is nice. But it also isn't, because I liked Tunic, if people played that one, but that game is really hard, like, you need to take notes.
Yeah.
And this does not make you do that. It's a nice, like, in the middle, in terms of navigating around. And it also just plays like super smooth, like controlling the ship to do like circle strafing and stuff feels great. It's really, really fun. If you like either like Zelda likes, but have maybe gotten a little tired of sort of the, I guess, like standard mode, and we're like, what if I was a spaceship instead? And you think that sounds neat.
you should
check it out.
That does
really,
sound
really
actually.
Like it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I think it's very funny, and I don't think it's really a spoiler. There's a little town in the game, and you will like rescue people to bring to the town who will be like merchants and stuff, except that all the people are just ships. And because I guess everyone that lives on this planet is a spaceship that thinks. And they don't have faces, so they just like spin around and make little hearts appear above their head when they're happy. And I think it's really cute and silly. So, I've been enjoying it. Cool. Well, let's talk about Power Rangers Lost Galaxy Episode 45, Journey's End Part 3. The finale of Lost Galaxy.
We're here.
Yay!
Finally.
We're here. We made it. And you know who else made it? Is both Trakina and Leo, because we thought, that's right, we thought Trakina was dead. No, we didn't. But she stumbles around and she sees a vision of her father, Scorpius, telling her to get into the cocoon, which she already
but
did.
That was different.
So that was confusing.
There, another guy was in the cocoon at the same time. It didn't really work out.
I'm pretty surprised that Deviant is just dead, I guess.
I was expecting the reveal of, oh, Deviant's been controlling her all this time, and that's why she's been super evil and murdering her own people in the last episode.
I feel like I would dislike that more than what they did, because that would take away her agency.
I do not want... you know, I support women's wrongs.
Yeah,
but,
totally.
But also, that entire Deviant thing made absolutely no sense otherwise.
Well, it made her, like, more evil, because she like, fused with him, I guess, but, like, in a way that he had ego
kind
death.
Of.
And she... Yeah, because she got some of his tech and stuff, right?
Yeah. She has his cannon, and it made her have, like...
More makeup,
black, like,
it made her mascara run, but...
Speaking of lore, I just want to correct some lore you had on the last episode. You guys were like, what are these... I don't remember what their names are. They're Red and Blue Megazord. You're like, they have AI, so, and then Simon's like, oh, they're, like, kind of sentient, but they aren't Galactabeasts. They literally are Galactabeasts. You got turned into robots.
Were they dead Galactabeasts? There was something different
about
them, right?
They were Galactabeasts of dead planets.
Yeah, Deviant turned them from, like, flesh and blood Galactabeasts and ripped them apart into separate little robots to become cyborg things.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Okay, so they were slightly different, but yes, I did forget
that
they
were
Galactabeasts.
And they survived Gingaman, but did not survive this, which is very sad, because they were, like, guys. They were, like, people, you know? Like...
Yeah, I mean, that is a bummer that they're dead. But I did forget that. I also, this whole time, I was like, up until the 2/3 of the way through this episode, I was like, did the Galaxy Megazord die? And I just forgot.
Yeah.
Because where
is
it?
It's so weird that you don't see it until, like, the very end, and it does, like, a little thing that doesn't really... It helps a little bit, I guess. Yeah.
But, like, also, it shows up of its own volition, and I'm like, well, where was it? What was it doing?
They had a family reunion to get to. Yeah, you know, they had to, like, just, you know, they were out of town. They didn't know what was happening.
But Trakina gets in the cocoon, and unlike the last time where when she got out she was hotter, not so well, you know, if this works for you, that's fine, I guess, but she's
goopy.
Like a bug.
She's very
she
goopy.
Is goopy, that's true.
She's covered in Nickelodeon slime.
There is a line specifically that is like her father saying, cast aside your beauty.
Yeah, well, that was why she didn't want to get in it originally. He was like, you should get in this, and she was like, will I still be hot? And he was like,
I gotta say, like, she's still, like, a sexy bug lady. Like this is very much that, like, sexual dimorphism in MMO, like, races, where, like, Scorponox, or whatever the fuck his name is, it's like, that's a Transformer. But the Scorpion that guy, or whatever the fuck his name is, like... He looks like a terrible, horrible monster. It doesn't look anything humanoid at all. I mean, Trakina's just like a humanoid bug lady with tits.
Yeah.
A hot lady with
those tits. You gotta know she's got tits.
she does have boobs. I am gonna be honest. Until this episode, I thought the eyes on top of her head were a hat, and now I realize it's not.
Oh, she's like Princess
part
Ruta.
Of her head. Yeah.
Yeah, like
the
Zelda.
But
girl. She's got like eyes on top of her head.
Yeah.
And she's the only Zora that has that for some reason. I don't know.
Part of her body. But also, that's just funny to me because similarly, I thought Rita Repulsa's hair was a hat until we watched this show again as an adult, also. So I guess I just
sometimes
don't know.
Costuming is hard, okay?
yeah. So, but yeah, so she gets out, a bunch of Nickelodeon DAC comes out with her. And then we see Leo, trying to contact the other Rangers. But he hears some stuff going on over at the crashed, Scorpion Stinger, and he stumbles off that way. And then we have the theme song, and everybody's happily landed on the new planet.
Yeah, Mike says that everyone is accounted for, which is not true because Leo's gone.
Yeah.
Which is straight up not true.
It's fine. He's distracted by the
fruit
basket.
Leo was never actually... I'm guessing
that maybe...
Leo was never part of the official crew.
Well, sure, but he's still missing. I'm guessing maybe he's like, doesn't want him to know that Leo's a Power Ranger still for some reason, and that's why he's not...
Yes, I think he's covering because he immediately after he tells Commander Stanton that he contacts Kai and is like, "Hey, did you find him yet?" Okay. So I think he's covering for some reason. This whole season will end with, I guess, technically that the Commander Stanton not knowing their Power Rangers, even though that's insane.
There is no need for them to hide their identity either.
No.
Yeah.
No,
we'll get to it in the scene, but like, I really expected them to like be like, "Oh, look, this is who we are," because like that's how like, especially since like In Space ended that way.
It's how I want to say most of the seasons end that way, and In Space definitely did. But yeah. So Leo goes over. We cut back to Leo. And he goes over to the ship, and we see that Trakina has slimed her way. I guess it's like acid because it looks like it's eaten through the ship.
I thought she just like kind of ripped through it, and there's goop because she's goopy.
I thought she was just goopy and leaving a bit of a mess.
Yeah, what I like is the goopy footprints because, as my wife pointed out, someone had to fill in those footprints of goop.
Yeah.
Oh man! To do that. Imagine how hard
to make the footprint first.
To make the footprint and then fill it in, but imagine how hard it is to make sure you don't like
spill,
drip any of the goop.
Yeah, right.
Anywhere else, because then cleaning it up is going to be a huge problem to get the sand smooth again.
Just so much goop. It also it's like in the footprint so much that it looks like it's like in a mold,
Yeah.
Like, it reminded me of, like, Creepy Crawlers,
too,
like, making those things.
He probably could have spilled, and, like, because, yeah, she drips some goo, but there is no spills. Like, the footprints are perfect. It's, like, it's very funny to me.
Yeah. So, the footprints are going off towards Terra Venture, which everybody else is evacuated from.
It's dead.
And Leo's like, "Whoa, Terra Venture, I better get down there," and he runs off, and, Now, listen, Power Rangers is never super consistent with what anybody's powers are. They constantly make stuff up. Why Trakina's new bug form allows her to repower up the entire space colony, I do not know.
Yeah, it is pure magic because, note, she is lifting this thing up. There are no rockets left on this. This is 100% magic or psychic lifting.
Yeah, because she uses her staff and
two, which is like
yes.
So it makes me feel like there is thrusters on this thing, but like you don't really see them, like you said. Like it just looks like it's floating.
Well, it lifts up off, and there's like a little little dust cloud that sort of looks like it. I don't know. I can't tell. Either she's lifting it with her brain / magic, or she repowered it, and neither of those things really makes sense.
If she's lifting a magic, she also definitely repowered it because like the lights turned back on. Like,
Yes, that's true. And Leo even says,
"Yeah, the implication is like that the staff is powering everything."
There is kind of a cool shot here where Leo's walking around, and you can see the broken dome and space behind him with like some light pouring through from like.
Yeah.
There's some bad special effects in this, but that shot's pretty good.
The special effects aren't great, but like the atmosphere of him walking around and there's nobody else there, and they're also using, I don't take as many notes for this show as because A, I've been doing it a while, and B, I we like have the episode on, but I do when there's music things because I can't hear it, obviously. They have like a horror movie score for these like 3 minutes, and that's actually pretty effective at making some tension. We know she's in there, but Leo's just kind of walking towards this.
Yeah, I did like these sequences of like Leo alone, like exploring the ship, trying to figure out what was going on. I think they actually like put a surprising amount of effort into like the atmosphere and the cinematography.
Yeah.
And I will also say, like, they trashed all these sets. Like, they look like actually broken. Cause I guess, you know, they're not going to use them again. So, everything's like, you know, messed up as the wreck would imply. Now, also, in addition to the fact that she's gooped everywhere, there's just bugs. There's just bugs. Like, well,
I thought that was just decoration on the staff.
Is it just on her staff?
Yeah, that's just decoration on her staff.
That would have been pretty funny if, yes, like, she just started a bug infestation, too. But I'm pretty sure that's not what happened.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
Yeah, she got that staff after her father died. And I think that's like part of him or something. And that's like, yeah, that's another lore thing you guys got wrong a little bit ago, was that you said that Trakina was like exiled by Deviant. She wasn't. She left on her own accord because she didn't want to turn into a bug monster. She did not get exiled.
Oh, that's right. Well, but he didn't he say like, you have to do this, or and she, no, so she I, ran away. I think, so she I think wasn't she like just exiled.
Did it because she didn't want to like go in the cocoon. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Speaking of bad special effects, Trakina like flies.
She's supposed to be crawling on the wall.
I guess she's supposed
to. Yeah, like,
I will say, it looks pretty good for like Power Rangers. She's clearly on a wire or something, but yeah.
It's really, it's just silly. It's fine. It just cracks me up. But Leo she drops down and it's like, welcome back, Leo. And I'm like, I didn't know you knew his name. You guys always call them by their ranger colors, but I guess you knew that the whole time, okay?
It's because she wants you to know she's a little silly.
Oh, I guess she is.
It looks really silly. It does not look intimidating. So I have to assume she just wants to look a little silly.
No. I guess we should describe this a little bit. She's green and like, she's got still the like eyes that were part of her, like, you know, a helmet looking thing before, but they're like part of, she also has like a bunch of compound eye things.
Yeah. Her whole body is covered in a carapace, basically.
Yeah. She also,
yes. And she doesn't have any like human facial features left. They're all gone.
Her mouth is also stuck in a static position, and she's got a real,
yes.
They are trying really hard to show that she is now a monstrous creature, so she's got, like, a very different movement pattern, but it looks like she's doing a weird interpretive dance all over the place.
Yes.
she actually looks like she's doing, like, some putty movements, some. Like, that, like you said, kind of got that. But she also talks different. But it's like still the same voice actress. Yeah. I think they've just got like a voice filter on her. But she still knows kung fu, and now she can jump higher. I guess it's maybe like a grasshoppery.
Yeah,
Well, it's green, sort of makes you think of grasshopper. And Leo decides to fight her without morphing for some reason, because you can see he can morph, because he gets thrown out of the building during their fight, and while he's falling, he morphs.
Yeah, I forgot they had established that the place they drive the Terra Venture is on the top of a very tall skyscraper, and he gets just punched out this huge fucking building and is falling for so long that he morphs like mid fall, and then. It's a picnic table and just eats shit.
And then
so
she lands and she does like a hero landing and has like cracks in the ground. I thought that was kind of cool.
I thought she sold the landing a lot better than he did.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Also, he fights her unmorph for a little bit, which I was trying to, because somebody asks, one of our questions we got was like, can you pinpoint like exactly why, kind of what went wrong this season? Because I know y'all didn't like it that much. And I was thinking like part of, there's a lot of reasons, but part of it is like, I feel like literally every time one of the Rangers is alone and there's some like maybe tension, everybody else shows up in like 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And while the other Rangers are going to show up, this did remind me of like, oh yeah, in the first couple seasons, like, you know, Jason gets stuck in like Goldar's like evil dimension and like stuff like that.
Climax by himself based off of like stuff that I knew about it. Cause like he ends up defeating her on her, you know, on his own. We'll say how, so no big spoilers, but like the other Rangers do show up. I also like that she can become like a weird floaty face now. She can like become green energy and just
That was weird. Yep. But what I was gonna say is he actually fights her unmorphed for a while, which is silly, but it's also kind of cool and not something you've seen that much of.
Like, yeah, I kind of like that scene.
But then he morphs and he fights her a little bit longer, and yes, she can turn into like a green energy.
And like it looks like her face that when flies it's still, around. But it like,
she has really a collection of superpowers. I mean, I know a lot of superheroes and villains are like this, but if you listed all the things she does in this episode and then we're like, what is
there's the connective tissue of this power set? There's got to be like a wiki article that lays out her powers.
You'd be like, I don't know, man. But yeah. He is getting his butt kicked. He gets like thrown into a big fountain. And then Mike calls Kai and says, hey, we found him, but he's flying on a collision course.
I like how everyone's just watching him on like a little CRT TV.
Yeah.
Do they have that connection? Like,
how do they know to watch that TV? Yeah. How do they have that many cameras in Terra Venture that you can have that many good angles?
And why does it go back to this set? Because like they abandoned Terra Venture. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It is funny. I'm looking at the TV that they're watching. It cuts like it was an episode of Power Rangers to different angles, which doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Trakina is going to crash Terra Venture into the planet to kill everybody, which is, again, pretty fucked
up. It's a neat idea.
Like, I know. It's one of those things where I know that Rita wants to take over the world. Like, I know that. But there's just something a little more fucked about, like, yes, I'm going to ram this ship into all of you and kill everyone.
I wasn't on last episode, so I couldn't really talk about Villamax's whole thing. He didn't do a lot in the series, but on his first appearance, I really liked him. And I thought it was...
Me too. I liked him on his first episode.
It was pretty lame how they just kind of killed him off so quickly after his face turn. Wouldn't it have been awesome if it was Leo and Villamax versus her, and then, Villamax, sacrifices himself to, help defeat her or something? So, like, there's any kind of gravitas to him dying at all?
My two main complaints about Villamax dying or like face turning and dying is that it's too fast, and also that then for some reason he's like, I'll just lay here and you kill me, which I don't
understand.
I think
it would be really cool if the climax was Villamax and Leo fighting her and the other Rangers don't show up.
Yeah, that would be rad.
I'm a little bit torn on the other Rangers showing up because it is the finale. You want the other Rangers to be involved, but also it's really cool just to have Leo fight her on his own.
And also, based on how the fight ends, I feel like you didn't actually need the Rangers to show up.
Yeah, the other Rangers could, you know how, spoilers, the Megazord shows up to, help the ship not crash. What if the other Rangers were in the Megazord, and they were doing shit in the Megazord while Leo was fighting Trakina? Yeah. Leo and Villamax are fighting Trakina. Sorry.
They're... No, you're fine. There are seasons where, because, you know, villains who become rangers, that's been a thing since the beginning. But there are seasons where, like, non-ranger villains do become good guys and team up with them, but it takes them for fucking ever. I think the first one is Jungle Fury, which is the 16th season. It's like, why did you wait that long? It's a cool idea. Just
Power
do
Rangers,
it.
The Ninja Storm does that too.
Ninja Storm, well, beyond other Rangers.
Sorry, you were discounting other Rangers. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm talking about like guys who look like
Tommy
monsters
does that
who become
Rangers,
good
sorry.
Guys.
Sorry.
Yeah. Right. No, that's fine. Yeah. Like it would be cool if Villamax became a good guy.
He could still die, but he could like do something
we've got,
with death. I don't know.
Yeah. I think was the guy who was like
Ecliptor?
In space.
Yeah, like Villamax.
Yeah, Ecliptor
yeah, exactly.
is like a
yeah, like very
version.
Similar, but also yeah. Ecliptor had a really bad ending too. So just really bad at ending that kind
he
of
did,
thing.
He did. But. So in any case, the other
They're
Rangers do
gliders.
Show up after Trakina tells Leo she's going to eat him, which is fine. Well, it's just, I mean, I'm an adult who's got a pervy sense of humor, but also it's just weird that it's like, I don't know, she's like shooting lightning and then she's like, actually, I don't think I'm going to zap you. I'm just going to eat you. And I'm like, Jesus. Okay.
Her mouth is also really small. How is she actually going to eat him?
Well, in pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just get the fork and knife out. It's going to take a while.
Okay.
But...
go yummy. But yeah, they show up, and she's really like exaggerating her like, you know, creepy monstery movements. And the other Rangers are like, hey, what the hell is that? And Leo's like, it's Trakina. Also the other thing that frustrated me actually is that her whole like, remember how she was bad at fighting at the beginning?
Yeah.
That was like one of her
with
things. And then she trained with Villamax with a sword. She's not using a sword now. I know she's supposed to be super powerful, but
and
now,
also very
but
like monstery, which monsters like I think it would be too humanizing to have her with a sword.
I guess so. Yeah. But she still does have a magic
and
staff.
Her
but whatever.
Whip thing that she has for like 5 seconds.
I was going to say, she does pull out a whip that she uses on
some
Leo,
really bad CG.
Which doesn't work like any whip I've ever seen. Yeah, because she wraps it around him and then it like...
It
I don't even know how
him
to describe it, really. The whole... Yes, which like while still wrapped around him, it doesn't like flick him. It's weird.
And then it disappears and it's the only thing she does with it.
Down on the little camp with all the humans, the refugees, they see the Terra Venture coming towards them, so that's bad news. The Rangers try to use their quasar launchers, thank you, and she just catches it and
kind of
like back at them.
Yeah, they kind of use like a bunch of their finishers. They also use like the motorcycle one, and that one was funny because like the Pink Ranger and Yellow Ranger, Karone and Maya are like holding her steady while he goes to like drive through her, and it made me think of like Piccolo and Goku and Raditz.
Yeah,
yes, totally.
Like just drive through us, Leo. It's okay. But she actually throws them to the side before the motorcycle hits her. Very helpful. Very kind of her to do that.
Yeah. But yeah, he uses the red capsular cycle where it like turns into a fireball. But nothing is killing her. You see the Terra Venture like starting to go into re-entry and everyone is
Vulcan
running
skull.
Away
I mean,
from
Vulcan
it, which is, I mean, included. I know I would. Oh yeah, that's right. I would probably also run, but it's not
like
help.
My wife brought up run towards where it is because then they'll fly over you.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. This is the Prometheus thing. I don't know if you all saw Prometheus.
Famously.
I haven't seen it, but I know argument the thing on the internet. Where it's like you could just go on left or right instead of running.
There's like a big circular piece of debris that is like rolling after them, and it's going in a straight line, and they just panic and run directly away from it instead of to either side. But
that, that film had enough other problems that I don't think that was.
Yes. I like that movie, and I think people were weirdly nitpicky, but I
think everyone wanted aliens, and they got whatever the fuck Prometheus was.
Yeah. So Leo uses his battleizer because hey everybody, remember the cool toy? I don't remember he's used this before. Used it has like a claw on it.
Okay.
Not very often, but he's used it before.
And he brings her to him, and then he goes, "I wish I didn't have to do this." And I was like, "Wait, what?" And this three-parter has so many people trying to and or successfully blow themselves up. It's wild.
because he draws her in real close because he wants to make sure this hits and hits hard. But it also is so close that it blows up the battleizer after he does it.
Yes, and when he does this...
I love the zoom into his eyes, like looking all determined.
Yes. Yeah, it does like a Iron Man, like, into the visor thing.
Which a bunch of Power Rangers seasons post Iron Man does. This is kind of the first time it's done it, though. Yes. It does it a lot in future seasons.
I do think, I think in general, like, I know that Tom Holland, like, complains about the Spider-Man mask and like, well, I can't emote. And it's like, people can, like, fucking Kamen Rider has, you know, they figured out
also,
how to do it.
Also, specifically Tom Holland's Spider-Man can emote. It's got the eye things that move.
I know. That's, he can't emote. Yes, that's also silly. But I do think that's a cool solution for, like, a tech-based superhero because you got a little helmet cam. Anyway, when Trakina blows up, there's like a fire skull demon head thing. Which I was like, oh, I guess she's not dead.
Don't worry about it.
I guess that's what happened when you blow up a bad guy that's evil enough. I'm not sure. There's 9 minutes left of this episode and she's dead. And that's kind of my main problem with this episode. Because I feel like the rest of it really loses a lot of steam. but Leo's okay. He gets up and
I think he's dead for like a second.
They give him the sick ass partially broken helmet.
I do like that. I always love when their helmets are damaged. You can see their face. It's fucking sick.
Very cool looking.
Is this the first time Power Rangers has done it?
I feel like they have to have done it previously.
I don't know. I don't think they have. I think this might be the first season of PR that does it. Like, Sentai probably did it, like, way before this.
Let's see.
Time does it.
Yeah, which is after this.
It might be the last or the first one. Quick, like, image result I'm seeing. Those are all after. Yeah, I see a bunch of images. The Red Ranger likes to get a broken helmet, apparently, but these are all after that one. So, yeah, it might be the first time. A lot of these are also from Sentai, so maybe they do.
I don't think Giga Man has this, which is interesting, but.
A lot of the. Other like later ones also including in the next one they're like the visor can go up so like you can still have the helmet on but you see which like I don't think they've done that before either so he's got this busted helmet. He gives this like weirdly goofy thumbs up That's
very Leo thing to do.
It is, yes. They run over and they're like, you're okay. And but here's the thing. We do still have Terra Venture coming to crash and kill everybody.
Barreling towards the unnamed planet.
Yes, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about sure that in a minute. But yeah, they're on it. I will say, I think we've said they do in general in this season a pretty good job of like when they're, you know, like in the last episode or the first episode of this three-parter, when they're on like the tunnel as it gets like broken, I feel like all that compositing is okay. This is bad. It's not good. Because they're like on it on Terra Venture, and you can see outside.
I like the shots where it shows the ship going over like Commander Stanton's head and stuff. Those are really fun.
Yes, yeah, that part's
not cool. It's pretty bad. But then the Galaxy
Megazord shows
finally
up to help.
I love this, this episode. I was like, when is the Megazord going to show up?
I love how they're just like in the Terra Venture going like, oh god, what do we do? And then all of a sudden the Megazord head just peeks up. It's like, hey guys, how you doing?
Yes.
I love the shot too. And I love the shot of the Megazord like not grabbing the point of the ship.
Oh my god, it's so funny. The shot of the Megazord, like,
moving its arms towards it.
to like, it's supposed to be, I think, like, grabbing the broken end of one of the skyways, but, like, this shot in particular really looks like, it reminds me of, like, in, like, a PS1 game where they're, like, okay, this character needs to interact with his object, but we cannot do a special animation for just that. So he's just sort of going to wiggle at it.
Their block hand will hover next to the crowbar.
Yes.
Yeah, and you will just interpret, understand that they are supposed to be grabbing it.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yep. And then, sorry, that what you just said, Iris, reminded me of something that I don't think I've said on here, but because the new Final Fantasy VII just came out, it reminded me of it. When I was a little kid, because their hands are all squares, I thought everybody had minigun arms like Barrett does.
Really funny. Oh, that's delightful.
And I didn't understand why none of them would use them.
That's so except funny.
Because they all have square hands.
You're so true, child.
Yeah, it's a square soft
you're so
game.
True.
But yeah, so the Megazord, they say like guides it
away from the people,
down.
So it like blows up safely away from them.
It's a huge explosion, so good thing it went,
okay,
you know, somewhere
including
else.
Including the Zords, which I was happy that they didn't die, because, you know.
It's safe.
Yeah, well, the Zords are nice. You do see Bulk and Phenomenus, but they don't
say
anything, by the way. They do cut to them a couple times, but they don't say anything.
You'd have to pay
the
more bad lines.
Where I thought they were going to, like, reveal who they were, especially because Leo's helmet is broken.
Yeah.
And you could tell it's Leo pretty easily, actually. But yeah, it doesn't do that.
Right, yes. Because Leo and the rest of the Rangers, like, show up to the everybody who's still alive, and they sort of just wave and do, like, a we did it, and everybody
some hugs
cheers
and
the
stuff.
Power Rangers. Yeah. And they run in and do hugs. And, like, yeah, you, like, Leo, you can see his face, but
whatever.
You know, it's whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just, like, why? I don't understand why they decided that they needed to keep their secret identities. Maya, like, the, because she can
the
talk
wolf
to
thing
the
thing is like,
the,
hey,
Galactic
come over
Beasts.
Here. And she's like, yes. Okay. And Leo's like, I'll follow you.
Yeah, so they follow the Galactibeasts. Because she says they're like leading me somewhere. They lead her to the statues that all the people got turned into.
Also, they remove their helmets, and it's like a effect thing where it's like their helmets are like kind of coming off their heads.
It's like just their head demorphs, basically. Yeah. But this is where she realizes that they're on Mirinoi. Now, I know that they've been busy since they got to the planet, but say you were in space and you didn't know exactly where you were, but you landed on a green planet that had like an atmosphere you could breathe, and you saw a raccoon. Would you be like, well, this planet also has raccoons? Or would you be like, this is clearly the planet I started from. Somehow I have returned here. Because, well, she's been here. She, like, on this planet. So she's seen, like, the plants and like, animals.
I mean, I'll say she, I guess she hasn't spent a lot of time there. But yeah, it's only, like, a little bit away from where her village was. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah. She should have
maybe figured that out. Like, oh, the grass here is mowed. I wonder why.
Okay, good. I'm glad you brought it up, because I was thinking, like, maybe it's because I didn't really watch much of this, but like, surely if you have apparently been to this planet before, you would recognize it
lived there long whole
before
life.
Now,
yeah,
right?
She lived there 20 years or something.
Yeah.
I can see her not recognizing it from space, because it doesn't look like the people of Mirinoi have space travel or like NASA satellites take pictures of the Earth or Mirinoi.
That's a question that I want to bring up. Assuming that they are not from space, that they evolved on this planet, why is there only one village of humans?
Well, we don't know if there's only one.
That's a good question.
There could be more.
Well, because they supposedly scanned the planet and were like,
"That's right."
Yeah, but they all petrified because I will say it's weird that the entire planet isn't petrified, because that's what happened in the first episode. I guess it's all been like,
oh yeah, that's
it's
right.
all been
it
like slowly depetrifying, except for the people and like a lake we see in a scene. Yeah.
It's wild.
It's weird. It's really weird. It's weird that they just end up back there, but like, I don't know. It's fine, I guess. It's just like quite a coincidence in fucking space, but you know, whatever. Now she says, they flash back and are like, now remember, they said that the five heroes would be able to draw the swords, and that they would save, you know, the people of Mirinoi. And then they show everything turning to stone. But we end the flashback and she's like, well, but we couldn't save Mirinoi. Oh, well, but at least we did our quest and finished our journey.
And then she's like, let's put our swords away, because then someday someone might be able to save them, like the next group of Galaxy Rangers or whatever. But it just happens that's also how she saves everybody.
This, I think, is starts a trend that a lot of the series are gonna do, which is everybody voluntarily gives up their powers at the end of the season because they're like mission's done. And I don't like it.
Why?
I've never liked it. I
think it's good. They don't want to be Rangers forever. They've done their battle and they're done. They want to go back to their normal lives. What's wrong with that?
I guess. To me, go ahead. Sorry.
Maybe it's good though to have magic powers. Like,
yeah, what do they need them for? Their magic powers are specifically for fighting. Like, there's nothing else they can do with them.
They're on a planet where, you know, maybe where there are no other people. You know, if you had access to Galactibus, you could use them to move lumber, help construct buildings.
There's no reason they can't hang with the Galactibus anymore.
Fair, but I assume if you give up the sword, you give up the Galactibus.
Why? Because Maya can just talk to them. They're like creatures who have like their own will. So like,
okay.
I think my thing is just like, I don't know that there's not going to be other aliens who want to kill us. Like,
yeah,
I guess they could just take them back again. Maybe the swords.
Yeah, I assume
know.
The swords aren't just stuck in there. They could probably like be like, oh, turns out.
Yeah, that's a good point. In some other seasons, they will like fully like just not have access to them anymore. So whatever. I guess it's not that big a deal. It's just that I think this is the first one. I'm pretty sure because in Turbo they just like get those, but they don't lose the Zeo powers, and then in Space they still have them. I guess it's mostly confusing when they start doing the team the team ups even though they've like
yeah well in this specific character the, hey, whatever, he went and grabbed the sword matter. Again and it's fine.
Yeah. Yep. But also, for some reason, putting the swords back fixes everyone who got turned into stone, which, like, the stone thing was something Furio did. It wasn't tied to the swords, so I don't know why that fixes it. I also don't know why it brings Kendrix back to life.
Well, okay, I will apparently. Say, this leads to, like, Lucas's theory that she was in the sword, like, very cleanly. She came out of the sword.
Yes, I agree. That's not textual, to be clear, but it makes a lot of sense as a fan theory that it... Because you see it holding the saber and giving it to... oh my god, what's Astronema's human name?
Human name.
Crone. her regular human name, sorry. So I assume that that's... You know, I don't know. That makes enough sense to me. It's just like she's back alive now. That part maybe I don't understand. That she would show up as like a ghost again would make a little more sense. But whatever, it's fine. Happy ending.
I guess
for
it
everybody.
Was just the magic of putting the swords back and sacrificing their powers that they're just like, here, we're gonna fix everything.
Yeah, my interpretation is that by putting the swords back and giving up the power then basically dispersed to do everything that it just did here.
And like does a bunch of sense. Nice stuff. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sure. You do get Kendrix.
You don't see them on screen together at the same time. Says, I think it would have been nice if they like shared screen, but that's fine, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. I think they're there because they're all on the same
set.
Just
for some reason,
like
she doesn't go up to her and hug her or something like that. Because, you know, Maya hugs her. But Mike and Corona are off to the side. Like,
And then we see the Galactic Beasts celebrating a bunch of fireworks.
Yeah, Galactic Beasts
are
still here,
also
see?
Happening.
Fair.
Yeah, they're fine. And they're doing a fun dance, which I enjoy because I like those big Galactic Beasts.
They're doing an end of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Yes, very much.
Where the fireworks
so.
Come
yeah,
from?
That's very much what it feels like. I mean, I'm guessing the swords also did that. Whatever. They're
it's
well,
magic
you know how
fireworks.
Luke would say, like how when the suits get hit, they spark because that's the grid, morphing grid. Then that's probably the same thing. It's just like extra power from the.
That was something I was going to bring up earlier. Power. I forgot when the Leo was fighting Trakina, she throws a picnic table at him and it explodes. And I'm like, was that table like rigged to blow up or something?
Yeah, I forgot about
this
that.
Table's made of magnesium.
There's nothing I love more than. I know that the movie Van Helsing is terrible, but there's a sequence where a horse, like a carriage, falls off a cliff and blows up, and I love that shit. It doesn't make whatever.
That is so
that
fucking funny. I had it muted because I was drinking.
Blows up.
I almost spilled my drink.
Yeah, Van Helsing is a wild movie.
It's my favorite thing. I remember there was like. There was a video of like a bug that was happening in Red Dead Redemption, maybe the second one. I can't remember if it was the first or second one, where like carriages were exploding instead of just like stop, like whatever, you know, just like stop moving. And that also, I just love that shit. It's really, really funny. But yeah, that's the season. I don't know, for some reason the ending of this feels whereas I feel like the first two parts like built up tension really well. For some reason, it feels a little anticlimactic to me.
The final fight against Trakina just. I think it's the fact that they had a Power Rangers original costume that they just didn't really know what to do with that fight. And I think it just didn't ramp up the action that much. And
it also ended like nine minutes before the episode ended. Like,
yeah. And the epilogue bit was, oh yeah, right, Miranoi, I remember them. Oh, they're back. Cool. Kendrix is also back.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's just very fast, I guess.
Are you guys familiar at all with the game Xenoblade Chronicles X?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It ripped off
I'm
the
not,
show.
Go ahead.
Because Xenoblade Chronicles
is about
the spaceship that has New LA on it, which is in this little like dome thing that like lands on this planet called Mira.
You're totally right. Yeah.
And then they have to be refugees on this planet in this like domed city of New Los Angeles. And
the ending of X is also bizarrely rushed.
That's very funny. I know that this is obviously not the first thing that's done, like the dome city in space thing, but
with it landing on, it's yeah, funny that it's Mira, called Mira. Like, even.
Yeah, that is funny. But yeah, it's you know, I think I will say that like we've often complained about like the pacing of multi-parters, and I think it works kind of up till the end sort of for me. Otherwise, I feel like they build this is a really bad situation pretty well.
Still had like Trakina with like troops and stuff in part three. And then at the end of it is when she has lost all her troops. She becomes a monster. She's just completely desperately trying to kill them with no like actual goal anymore. Like that would have worked better as like a ramp up to that. In one episode rather than like kind of split between two of them.
Yeah.
I actually think part of the problem is Trakina doesn't have like
a motivation.
She doesn't have either. Well, she doesn't really have a ton of motivation, but she also doesn't have in this last part either like an evil speech after which she's defeated or like a, no, I can't believe you've defeated me. She just dies. Mm. Like, and that might be part of why it feels a little like rushed, I guess. So we do have some questions. I asked us about battle damage, final forms, alien planets, or lost galaxy questions. We've got a couple here. Nancy asks, how many forms must your opponent reveal before you throw in the towel? I would be honest, if I was fighting somebody in real life and I beat them and then they were like, actually, I have more arms now, I'd be like, you win. I'm done. You got me.
I'd say probably like three. Because normally you expect like three phases max. You know, that's pretty much the standard for like a final boss is like three phases. When you get to four phases, you're like, all right, fine, man, I guess.
How many phases does Frieza have? It's like more than
five.
Four. Yeah, dang. Frieza's
and
ridiculous.
Then, and then six is if it? You include Cyborg and seven if you include Golden?
Yeah, that's not all in the same fight, though, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But on Namek, there is, like, Twink Frieza, Weird Alien Frieza, Big Frieza.
And then Twinkier Frieza.
Twink Frieza.
Yeah, it does.
I really appreciate that Frieza, and I'm not... I want to make sure I don't say this in a weird way. I feel like a lot of times anime, especially around then, like it happened in Sailor Moon a ton. Anytime there was a twink dude, they would make them a girl in the American like localization. Yeah. Like a lot of the bad guys.
And then they only did that with one Sailor Moon villain, and that was because he had an explicit romance with another character who was a man.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I remember at least one, so yeah, so maybe it's that one. But then I know that they've done that in other anime of like that era, especially. I always appreciate that Frieza, yes, is incredibly like twinky, but they never were like, no, we're gonna make Frieza a girl over here. Like, it's always Frieza. I mean, well, I guess I don't really know for sure that that's they call Frieza him, right?
So. Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure. You know, aliens, so different. But yeah, I always was like, yeah, I'm glad that they just went with it, and I like Frieza's voice also. That's too many goddamn forms, though. We can all agree that, right? Like, that's too many. Especially when, because I remember the one that looks like the Xenomorph, and then the final one, obviously. But the ones in the middle, I feel like,
I might be wrong. I googled it, and it does look like there's small Frieza, big Frieza, alien Frieza, smooth Frieza,
and then final.
Yeah, there's four on Namek.
That's still a lot.
Goku has more staying power than me, though, so, like...
Yeah. I mean, sure, that was also a fight between, a couple of different people. Yeah. You know, it's Vegeta, and then you sub out for Piccolo, and then Krillin blows up, and then, you know, Goku.
Yeah.
Speaking of staying power, I think in a video game, it really depends. The number of forms I'm okay with really depends on if I get a save point in between them.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to give me like three forms and I have to do the whole fight over again if I die at the last one, I feel like at least one of the Persona games that I remember just like putting it down for a week because the final fight takes like a goddamn 2 hours and I died right at the end. So that's really frustrating. If there's saves and like you get your health back and stuff, I mean, I'm not going to say I'll do like however many because I'd get tired of it, but you can do more as long as you give me that option.
Had that exact problem with Final Fantasy Rebirth. Look forward to the podcast that we record about that. So
look forward to it, yeah.
I remember, I think I saw a tweet about it. Something that
the final, boss like, on original 7, like HD or whatever, just went on forever and a day. So I assume it just gets worse.
But yeah, I mean, I would say three is good. Two, I also like, honestly, I think two for a boss fight is my favorite. It's like one. Like hard fight, but it's not that crazy. And then like, whoops, one like reveal is always a lot of fun.
Two is a solid number.
Pokey asks, did they ever find the galaxy? Sorry, I missed this season.
I mean, that was very funny.
Sort of.
They found it and then they lost it again.
They found it sort of, and then they lost it again. Yeah, you're good. You're fine. Jeremy asks, can you pinpoint what went wrong with this season? It was my childhood season, but watching it as an adult, it felt flat and disjointed.
I want to say, like, having watched Gingaman and this, I think this one of the problems with this series is that it didn't go harder into its own story that it was concocting. It kept dipping into it had the Lights of Orion thing, which is just taken from Gingaman. It had like the Magnet Offender story, which is just taken from Gingaman. But like, it doesn't do anything to it doesn't do a lot to make it its own thing enough. Like a lot of the episodes,
and the best episodes are the ones.
Yeah, a lot of the episodes are just them adapting Gingaman episodes, and it's just why do that at all? Like, Just do whatever you want with the footage you have. Like, I think if it had made more of an effort to be its own story with like this space story, it would have been a lot better. But it just is kind of like, it's almost kind of like half-assed because they wanted to do their own thing, but also they took a bunch from the Sentai. So like, it just ended up being disjointed, like you said.
The disjointed thing, I'll say, I think part of it, and this kind of ties in what I was saying about Trakina not getting her like last stand moment, is like this other seasons have had like multiple villains, but this one really, I feel like when Treacheron is the main bad guy, the other bad guys are like there, but they're not like doing much. So, and then you kill that guy and he's gone, and we have the next person who we haven't had like that much characterization with. So as opposed to like, you know, Zed and Rita who are around the whole time and we know them and everything, or, you know, like building up this cast of villains, you're like letting us get to know somebody for a little bit and then they're gone, either dead or in Trakina's case, who I like Trakina a lot, but they keep like, here she is. She's like center stage for a couple episodes and then she's gone for a long time, either because she like Deviat takes over or we go to the Lost Galaxy or whatever. So part of, I think, the disjointedness is because I feel like the villains are all over the place in a way that hasn't.
Yeah.
Been as
and
much
like Gingaman did the thing too, where it had like a different general, like, but it also still had that like crew of like, you know, the guy who ended up being Captain Mutiny in this version was still always around, and Shalindo was always around and had their own stories and stuff. So like it still worked out in that series, but.
Yeah. It's not like, I don't know. It's not like horrible. I'm sure we'll cover eventually worse seasons, but I will say if I had to rank them, I don't know. This is probably pretty low for me so far.
I remember enjoying bits of it, but then the Lost Galaxy arc happened and I started to hate the series. So it's like, I think this is my lowest probably. I didn't watch season two. Cassie was saying season two was really bad.
Season two was really bad. It's one of those, we talked about it way back then, but like I love the Thunder Megazords, and that season they had what felt like 5 minutes of Zord footage, and they used it over and over and over again, and it just got really repetitive. But yeah, I don't know. It's you know, there's problems. It's not like absolutely horrific. There's good stuff. I think the Psycho Ranger stuff was great. I think the Magna Defender stuff was good too. But it disjointed is a good word for it.
Yeah, I think the Magna Defender stuff was pretty good too, but it was just taken from Giga Man. So
right. Nobody asks, Busted Visors, Scorch Marks, Slashed Suits, what's the best form of battle damage? You'll have a battle damage thing that you really like.
I think
like
the head needs to be visible.
Yeah, like the broken visor is really good. Like it's really good in this. Like that's one of the best parts of this episode, even though it's like not really like that much of a thing. Yeah. And like in the end of Spider-Man, it's cool when his mask gets messed up.
I do like fucked up suits though, with like tears and shit.
Oh yeah, that's pretty sick too.
Yeah, I was gonna say that my favorite of that is the first Arkham Asylum game, which takes place over one night. It like gets more jacked up the longer you get into the game. And it just looks really cool. The Spider-Man 2, which I liked okay. Sorry, is it just
called
Spider-Man?
The
Insomniac
2.
Games? Okay, so that newest one, that has combat damage like from like based on your health. And if you get really hurt, it's like too much battle damage. It gets to where it's like that those clothes would not stay on.
I don't think
his
it gets
body.
That bad, but that's
fair,
I don't know.
And I do think you can overdo it sort of. But yeah, I do like when it's got like I think especially when you So, like, for instance, if you fight like Wolverine or somebody with like claw, you know, things, and when you can see specifically what caused the damage, I think that's cool. Like, I really like that. Or like, you know, if somebody's got like bulletproof skin or whatever, if you see like someone's, like if Colossus gets shot, and so his X-Men uniform has like little holes in it, but I mean, he's like, okay. I love that kind of
also
shit
just
too.
Like ignoring the suits, like a character with like a cut off lip and like a bruise on their face looks fucking cool. Like,
yeah.
Some soot, some like, I think I can't remember who said it, this might have been on an episode of the Blank Check movie podcast, but like, some action heroes, like Bruce Willis, looks so much better when he's all fucked up and Die Hard than he looks like in a suit for some reason.
Shout out to
like,
friend
nice.
Of the show, Molly, who really likes Battle Damaged Boys.
Yeah. Keanu Reeves and John Wick, fucked up in a suit. Best of both worlds.
Yes. Yeah, very much. Yeah. So that's true. Like just some bruises and stuff is cool too. Like I just, it's nice to see, because I feel like, especially like more modern action movies, a lot of my problems with them is like, I killed a million guys. It was no problem. And that's like boring to me. So show me that it's hard with that
stuff.
That
was one of the things that set Die Hard apart when it came out, was that it was just like average Joe guy, like has to fight like a reasonable amount of terrorists. And
it's like, it's like eight
but
guys
it's fucking
or
tense.
Something like that.
And
it's not that
and you
many.
Had stuff like with like Schwarzenegger and like Sylvester Stallone before that, right? As the action movie stars who were just kind of like larger than life.
Schwarzenegger did make Predator though. And he gets all grimy and fucked up in that one.
Yes. Oh, sure. For sure.
And that's, it's cool when it happens there.
Yeah.
Predator is real good. So good. Dresh asks, what is the name of your final form?
You might have heard about me on Twitter. It's Big Boobs Emily.
I mean, mine is Cyber Angel, obviously.
Hell yeah.
Good. Okay. I feel like mine would have to involve like the letter Z somehow, because I feel like a lot of good forms will be like something X.
Well, you already
have
a Z in your name though.
I know, but I gotta figure out a way to emphasize.
I mean,
if I'm not making
a joke and I'm thinking about myself as like a cool anime character with my whole like dog thing, it would have to do something with like Luna or something, because you know, like the moon like enhances wolves and stuff.
Okay.
Or like Alpha or Omega, because
I don't like that.
With
there are other things there that you're bringing in that I don't think you mean.
Yeah,
to.
Yeah.
Well,
you're kind of. Also,
true.
Alpha wolves are not a real thing.
Nope.
No, they're not. But you know, it's also you know. Super Saiyan isn't a real thing.
Yeah,
but
like,
sounds
it's not, like, it's completely devoid from reality, Super Saiyan. Like, people believe Alpha Wolves are a thing and then
that's
made some, like,
true.
Shitty, like, fucking men
Wasn't
theory
that,
about
didn't
it.
The guy. Well, and didn't, like, the guy.
Yeah,
who,
he said, like, yeah,
like,
I was. I
did
I,
that research. He was
yeah,
like, no,
totally.
I was wrong. Sorry. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, I don't know exactly. I'm not sure I have a good name. I think the thing about like good form names is that they sort of have to be a little lame to like stick, I feel like. Like Super Saiyan, I feel like sounds cool to us now, but it literally is just they put super in front
yeah.
of the
yeah.
in front
Supersonic.
Of the thing. Like and then like the later ones, it's, you know, I mean, fucking Super Saiyan God Super Saiyan's the dumbest shit ever.
Isn't it also Super Saiyan God Super Saiyan Blue?
Yeah, okay,
so Super Saiyan Blue is Super Saiyan God Super Saiyan. Super Saiyan God is the red hair.
Because
okay.
Yes. But they only ever use that like once. It's they don't use it very much. I think Ultra Instinct actually is maybe both the worst and best of
Ultra Instinct. That's
of
cool.
those names. Cause it I think it sounds cool, but it also like that could be what a combo in Killer Instinct is called, and I would believe it. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't necessarily sound like it's from
it does sound like a state of being. Though, it doesn't. Ultra Instinct.
Yes, it does. That's true. It does sound like a form. Anyway, I guess I don't have a good answer for me, unfortunately. there. That's hard, I think. But, so that's our questions. Thanks everybody who sent, questions in. And we're gonna do,
Lightspeed Rescue. What's it called?
Lightspeed Rescue. We're going to do Lightspeed Rescue. Oh, I do have a quick announcement. I don't think I've said this on the show. I don't think we're going to do our normal award show thing. And the reason for that is because we have both because of our schedule change and because of the strike. If I needed to put together a list of memorable things that happen in this season, I genuinely think I'd have to rewatch it just because it got stretched out so much. So I think we're gonna skip that this time. If I think of some short form, maybe we can do something like that.
Okay.
And we'll definitely do our best to bring it back next time. But it's just unfortunately we had to. You know, we took off like 4 months.
Yeah, like I said or whatever. Earlier that I'm really down on the season, but I was enjoying it until Lost Galaxy arc. So maybe, but I don't remember how I felt about the earlier stuff at all, like because it's been so long. Yeah.
Right. So it would have to be. I'd have to do at least some
what you should
re-watching.
Do is maybe for Lightspeed Rescue, figure out some categories you want to do ahead of time. And then just update them as the show goes on.
We usually do the same categories.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, I can go back and get them and just I can make notes. I just previously I hadn't needed to because at the end of the season I could just look at the episodes and I could come up with it.
Yeah.
But it's been too long now and my brain is mush. So sorry about that. I do apologize for if there's people out there who really like those, but we'll do it again next time. But next time we are going to talk about Lightspeed Rescue. I'm excited for that season. And thanks for coming with us as we got to and then out of the Lost Galaxy. So join us. Oh, wait, hold on 1 second. Does anybody have anything they would like to plug?
Sure. I will plug Eidolon Playtest, a actual play podcast where we playtest the game Eidolon Become Your Best Self, co-created by your friend and mine, Molly and Luke. Right now, we are doing a parallel campaigns, Eidolon Disco and Eidolon Ska, about two sets of mystery-solving teens in Kentucky, set in the 80s and the 2000s. We are on the cusp of some real wild shit happening. So go check it out. It would be a great time to catch up. I would also like to plug Ultra Hulumbo, which is a podcast made by Marie and Fabby. And, both because it's pretty good, but also specifically because I guested on an episode while I was visiting them in Texas, where I got to talk about one of my favorite Godzilla movies of all time, Abira, The Horror from the Deep.
Nice.
So that was a good time. Definitely worth paying the dollar. Per month on Patreon.
Yeah.
Highly recommended.
Give Fab your money and listen to a fun podcast. Cool. All right. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to plug?
I'm good.
Sweet. Well, join us next time. So for Teenagers with Attitude, I've been Zach.
I've been Emily.
I've been Iris.
And you don't even know my final form.
Dang. May the power protect you always. But it won't for Morgan. Bye.
Bye.